This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. And a reminder that this is the home stretch for the Fall Member Fest. And we'd like to hear from you. You are the listeners who pay the freight for all the programming. Support from government sources is less than 10% of the budget for WRKF. It is you, the members, and the underwriters who make the trains roll. And without you, there would be no WRKF. And again, the bonus WRKF Pelican face mask on any pledge of $5 or more per month. And thanks to Emily Umhofer, Leah Shapiro, Jordan Fulbright, Malvin Rushing, two sustaining members away from adding another $100 from Tom and Claire Lamparter. So we are looking for you to be in those two and to get us to the point where we can add some more fuel to the engine here at WRKF. Your number to call, 855-893-9753. And I think Evan Osnos had to step out, but we are on the brink of talking with our favorite guest, Mark Ballard, every Thursday. And he is the Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, much to catch up with him about. But I know David in Atlanta was waiting in the wings. So, David, you have the floor right now, just you and me. David, good morning to you.
Well, thank you, Jim. You know, I wanted to ask your guest, and he sounds like a very informed, intelligent gentleman. There's been a lot of talk on Hate Talk Radio, and also President Trump retweeted something accusing Joe Biden of being a child molester, I believe his own daughter, and a pedophile. And also they have talked about Joe Biden swimming nude in the White House in front of female Secret Service agents. I wanted to ask your guest his opinion on this, and where does the truth lie?
All right. Well, the book, by the way, from Evan Osnos is Joe Biden, The Life, The Run, and What Matters Now. And there are all kinds of things on the World Wide Web about Biden that are not true. The swimming in the nude before Secret Service agents may actually be one of those things that is true, but I don't know that that is necessarily an offense that would warrant him not being capable of being president of the United States. But here's a story in the New York Times before we get to Mark Ballard. It says, last week, a political action committee called American Principles Project unveiled a new video on Twitter falsely claiming that Joe Biden supported sex changes for eight-year-olds. And by the way, I've been sent this by a listener or two who, of course, is supportive of Donald Trump. It says, since Friday, a similar video has also appeared on Facebook as many as 100,000 times, primarily in Michigan, a swing state. And what has been harder to pinpoint is how widely the video has been spreading through text messages. Though companies like Facebook and Twitter have developed tools for trafficking and policing disinformation on their social networks, texting activity is largely a free-for-all that receives little scrutiny from tech companies and government regulators. And this, of course, is a blatant falsehood and one very explosive, and it, of course, is designed to make Biden look to be some sort of whack job who has all kinds of deviant behavior, and that, of course, is not true. So there we are, 5 days before the election, and unfortunately, most anything goes. And we thought we had interesting politics in Louisiana, perhaps more feisty than in other parts of the country. And feisty, of course, is an understatement, Mark Ballard. But now, with the World Wide Web, these salacious allegations, and by the way, David in Atlanta is right. The president did tweet that Joe Biden was a pedophile. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I mean, I think that that's, but it's demagogue. That's the whole point of demagoguery, I think, is to make people mad, and that seems to work. That seems to be what energizes folks to vote, not over any great ideas or any support of specific visions for the future, but because I'm mad at the other guy.
Yeah, and we talk about how we dislike negative advertising, but we have tons of it, and polls have shown that, unfortunately, it works, that quite often being mad at the other guy is more important in some people making their decision to cast a vote than being happy with the person they're voting for.
Well, and the other guy is that has been the. I mean, it would go all the way back to, you know, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. I mean, that is exactly what motivates people to vote, is I don't like the other guy.
All right. Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you both. And I heard that the Pope is about to canonize St. Joseph of Biden because he's such a wonderful soul. He's not a pedophile. He's not a thief. He's not a corrupt politician. He doesn't plagiarize. He never lies. He never lied about his law school degrees and how high in the class he finished. They also lied about him swimming naked in front of female Secret Service agents. He's such a saint.
Well,
man, I'm going to light some candles.
All right, Gustavo, you sound like a Roman Catholic who may be happy that another Roman Catholic's about to become president.
No, he's not a Roman Catholic because he supports abortion, and you cannot be both.
No, I don't think
abortion.
He supports abortion. He supports abortion
no, he
rights.
Does. He
abortion
supports
rights
abortion.
Is different than supporting abortion.
No. It's the same thing. He supports abortion. He supports homosexual marriage, which I don't have anything against. He supports all kinds of things that are totally against the Catholic religion.
All right.
He's like Pelosi. Pelosi says,
I don't hate... Well, your president, our president, and he is our president, Donald John Trump, he is on the record before he became the Republican standard bearer that he supported partial birth abortion. But thank you, Gustavo. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with Mark Pallard. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, a lie has been around the world twice before the truth has gotten out of bed to put his pants on. Still have of that going on. I understand that Fox has a lawsuit where they won that they have a license to lie. Anyway, that's it's true. They won a court case. They were taken to court about lying, and they won that case. So they should have their license.
Do you think, now, Phil, you're obviously on the other side of the political spectrum from Gustavo, but do you sense that there's any more propaganda on Fox than there is on MSNBC on the other side?
24/7. Ever since Roger Ailes got together with Rupert Murdoch and formed News Corp, Fox TV, Rush Limbaugh, hate radio 24 hours a day, 7. And if you haven't been exposed to any progressive ideas and you're like 20 years old, what do you know about?
All right. You've got a point that if you watch Fox, you're going to get a warped sense of the world. It's going to be a one-sided sense, but I think you could say the same for MSNBC. Rarely, and I watch these networks, but I watch Rachel Maddow, I watch Chris Hayes. Rarely do I see any conservatives on MSNBC, and that's what we try to do. We try to have people of all kinds on this show. And in Louisiana, we have in public life more conservatives in high places than we do liberals. But Mark Ballard, Bill Cassidy is one of those people we'd love to have on this program. We've tried, but he's been unavailable. He's running a campaign and picking his spots. And right now, with this heavy, heavy turnout of almost 1 million people voting early and a higher African-American turnout than proportionately than a white turnout, Cassidy could be forced into a runoff. We talked about this last week, but it would seem that he probably will get over 50%, but I don't think it's a sure thing any longer in Louisiana.
Well, I don't. I guess we'll find out next week. But and I kind of think that he is going to hit the 50 plus one in the first go-around. I mean, it will not be overwhelming because I think it – really, and Trump will not be 20 points ahead like he was in 2016 as well. I think that those margins will be shaved considerably, but I also think that that they will be enough to win in Louisiana because you're looking at there is a massive turnout among the African-American community and among Democrats, much larger than was in 2016. But not large enough in a ruby red state to overcome a ruby red state.
Right. This race with Cassidy reminds me somewhat of the 2007 governor's race when Bobby Jindal won, and he had Walter Vlaso, who actually finished second, and Foster Campbell and John Georges all running viable campaigns, but Jindal got 54% of the votes in that race. And Cassidy, going in, that's what I would have expected him to get, but I think he'll get a bit less than that. And, of course, if he gets close to 50, then it's a horse race. And with the Senate being so closely competitive, likely when we on election night, it'll be one or two seats one way or the other. This could be the proverbial seat that determines the majority, and even though Cassidy would be an overwhelming favorite, I think we would get some attention we otherwise would not, with most likely Adrian Perkins in a runoff against Bill Cassidy.
Well, you make a good point there. If Cassidy does not make it in, then all of a sudden our seat becomes in play, and in play for having the Democrats control the U.S. Senate. And so we'll probably see what we saw back when he ran 6 years ago, and that is a boatload of money coming into the state and a very intense campaign. Cassidy will probably stop coming up with excuses on why he can't debate, and there will be a debate, and then we'll get to see how this runs. Adrian Perkins has a wonderful resume. I mean, he's a combat veteran, not just a West Point grad, but he actually fought in wars. Harvard Law School, and he would make a viable candidate if it was one-on-one, but...
All right, we're going to take a short break and return with more pearls of wisdom from Mark Ballard of The Advocate after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 5 days away from an election in Louisiana, a busy ballot with President, Senate, Congress, judicial races, the mayor's race, 7 amendments, sports betting, whole lot of shaking going on. Mark Ballard of The Advocate is with us, 877-217-5757. And thanks to Patrick Roquemore, Lori Edwards, Lewis Laurent. Tomorrow's the last day of the Fall Member Fest, so the clock is ticking. We'd like for you to get in under the wire, show your support for our station, and don't put it off any longer. If you can do your good deed, pick up the phone, you're in and out in fewer than 89.3 seconds. Donate today to support this forum for local conversations. Your number is 855-893-9753 to make your contributions. 855-893-9753. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana, you are on with Mark Ballard. Good morning, Henry.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mark. I'm feeling in a generous mood today, so I'm going to wish, and maybe we could have a little fundraiser to get over there where Senator Cassidy lives on
all
that
right,
point
okay.
at
now,
the LSU
Now, wait a minute.
Lake.
Now, Henry, you've called in a few times about this issue, so I think we've addressed this. What's your question? Do you have a question about something else?
Yes, I do. How can we consider a man who claims to be for protecting the pre-existing condition, yet, however, he lies to Jimmy Kimmel on national TV? How could we be for anybody like that?
All right. You remember, Mark, he said you had to have pass the Jimmy Kimmel test for him to back a bill to repeal Obamacare, and yet it didn't pass the Jimmy Kimmel test, and Bill Cassidy voted repeatedly for bills to abolish the Affordable Care Act. So the senator, who is a doctor, knows a little bit about health care, has somewhat been all over the place on that issue. I know you did a story in The Advocate last week about the health care distinctions between Perkins and Cassidy, but that, among other issues, does not appear to be one that's resonating as much as some others, but it is an important one.
Senator Cassidy said that that Jimmy Kimmel misunderstood what the bill that he did with Lindsey Graham actually did, and basically what they did was shift the money to the states in the form of block grants. Now, groups and analysts say that the states would be unable to continue to provide extensive care that is under the Affordable Care Act now, pre-existing conditions and some of them. But Senator Cassidy argues that that the framework that they put up is similar to the framework that they use for the federal program that covers children, and that that would work in covering all of adults as well. Though there are many people that disagree with it and say that it would end up doing away with the pre-existing conditions and caps on coverage and that sort of thing. So it's one of those up in the air. It would be a great thing that he and Mayor Perkins could talk about in the debate if they ever have one.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that Cassidy will debate Perkins even if there is a runoff. I don't know that that is a given. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mark Bauer. Thank you, Henry. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. A couple of things regarding the governor. Is that petition to try to get him removed, is that even going anywhere? And two, his lawsuit that he filed, you know, about the petition that the legislator signed last week to try to revoke him of his power, that. And one quick thing, should Cassidy get forced into a runoff? Let's say Trump loses and maybe even loses badly. You know, that'll be in December, which would be a much lower turnout. If the Dems just max out their vote in that runoff and maybe the Republicans are kind of depressed, you know, and control of the Senate is not at stake, so say the Dems have already won it back, any chance that then would that be the path for victory for an Adrian Perkins?
All right. That's an interesting scenario. But Mark, it would be a different race in December than it will be on November 3rd.
Right, and it would have to be that the get out the vote effort would have to match what the get out the vote effort for Governor Edwards was last year. And remember that he only won by 40,000 votes.
That is correct.
It's going to be tight. It's going to be close. You know, there is a possibility of victory for Mayor Perkins if he makes a runoff.
Now, as far as the petition, the one that 65 Republicans signed last week as they left the Capitol to take away the governor's powers, and that's now in the courts. What do you think?
Well, now the Attorney General has been saying, oh, yeah, it should already be in effect. And the governor says, no, I think you all have misread the law severely. And it'll be in the courts. And, you know, once again, we're going into an expensive lawsuit, you know, between the fights. So between Edwards and Landry, and the courts will decide whether or not it's constitutional.
Well,
I'm not a lawyer, so I can't tell you whether it's constitutional or not. It seems to make sense because the law that they were applying is not really on point, and I guess that's it. I mean, we'll see what the courts have to say.
Well, the legislature continues to go after the governor as though he's running for re-election. He does have a 4-year term, and this brings us to a question from a listener. Any chance that JBE will run against John, no relation, Kennedy in 2 years?
I mean, there's always a chance. I mean, I guess we'll have to see. It would be an entertaining race, I have to say.
It would be an entertaining race and a free shot for the governor, who would remain governor even if he were to lose. And John Kennedy is, according to polls, he is a very popular politician in the state of Louisiana. Tom in Hammond. Tom, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Morning.
Okay, I just wanted to comment about the petition. It's a vaguely worded statute, and the Senate stayed out of it completely. So you got the Republicans in the Senate over there who didn't think it was a good idea from the jump street. So it's not going anywhere.
All right. Well,
he's right. He has a good point there, though, is that it's hard to say that the voice of the legislature is coming from, 65 Republicans in the House, because the Senate stayed away from it, just stayed out of it altogether.
Well, considering that you wrote about it in your column in last Sunday's paper, they spent a lot of time at the Capitol, got paid for it, and didn't get a whole lot accomplished. And this is something, this petition, it could have been done without even going into session, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they tried. They tried desperately to do it before going into session. But I think that this was mostly about trying to kneecap the governor. I mean, we had, what, about eight bills or so. Now, the Senate President Cortez points out that they were able to kind of take the unemployment trust fund, which is going broke, and kick that down the road to avoid increased taxes for businesses and lower benefits for the unemployed. They were able to postpone that, and they were able to, you know, do some work in Southwest Louisiana, you know, because of the hurricanes. And so they were able to do that. But most of the other 70, I mean, there was, a dozen and a half of these emergency issues that needed to be addressed that didn't even have a bill filed for it. It seemed mostly about let's kneecap the governor's powers.
And the governor has handled his opposition with grace. He's not a Trumpian-type politician who tweets and makes allegations against his adversaries. And he's been in the midst of a series of calamities as far as natural disasters, and the latest being Hurricane Zeta. Some folks are giving him credit for just standing tall amid all this chaos, Mark.
Wait a minute, you dropped out for just a second.
Yeah, as far as the governor being being in charge in these interesting times, he's drawn a hand that most people would not want if they were elected governor.
What is it, five, six? I've lost count.
Seven, I believe, seven hurricanes.
Seven hurricanes have touched Louisiana. I mean, while dealing with the COVID crisis, while dealing with a legislative community that disagrees with everything he does. I mean, it's not the job, I don't think.
Well, Mark, next week we will catch up with you, and it'll be a postmortem. We'll see what happens, but it'll be fascinating to see what occurs Tuesday night. Thank you, my friend. Okay. Always a pleasure.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Be safe. And Matt Doyle says five hurricanes have hit Louisiana, but I've seen that number seven. That may include tropical storms, but we've had a whole lot of trouble in our state, and it has not been easy to be the governor, and it wouldn't have been easy for Eddie Rasponi either. So there we are. We'd like to thank you for your contributions this hour. There's still time to get in under the wire if you can. Give us a call, 855-893-9753. Patrick in Innisfail Estates, you've got 10 seconds to have the last word today. What's on your mind, Patrick?
I do got to commend the governor for not imposing an eviction moratorium like some of the other governors in other states, like the Republican governor in Florida, that at least our governor didn't take away our due process.
All right. Patrick has plaudits for our governor. First Financial Tax and Accounting and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support.